Too many things have been destroyed that I thought were bound to last forever, and new ones have informed that have given birth to new sorrows and joys, which I could have not foreseen then, just as the old ones have become difficult for me to understand. That is from Swan's Way by Marcel Proust. And welcome to The Charming Mistakes of My Youth, where the show gets the title from Swan's Way, Marcel Proust. I am Susanna Tontensop. You are listening to K-Chung on AM 1630 in Chinatown, Los Angeles, or worldwide on kchungradio.org. I would like to introduce to you our guest for the evening, Jay Erker. Hi.
Hey.
I met Jay during Open Engagement, a conference about art and social engagement that took place at the Queens Museum in New York this past spring. We both presented during Open Platform. I was delighted and impressed by Jay's innovative and humorous project, Invitation to Collaborate, which took place, or still takes place, in an office that you work at in downtown Los Angeles. And it's all about getting people to create artwork in their place of work, or in your place of work. And we can talk about that once I turn the mic over to you. And also about the song that we just heard, I Wear My Sunglasses at Night by Corey Hart. And so why don't you tell us about yourself and your art practice and all of it? So here you go.
Well, Invitation to Collaborate took place last year for like 3 months, where I invited people through my email, work email, to send me instructions to make art at work. And it was a lot of fun, and I was able to present it at Open Engagement, which was great as well. And for that, I made these little cards that other people can, in fact, perform artworks, you know, at their own jobs, too. So it kind of branched out a bit from there, so it's taken on a second life. Unfortunately, no one from the Open Engagement took me up on my little cards that I handed out. At least as far as I know, they didn't. But, you know, it's an idea to break up your everyday and to create new ways of looking at things that might appear banal or pedestrian. So it was a lot of fun to do that.
And where do we find more information about Invitation to Collaborate so our listeners can participate?
Well, the easiest place to find out more info is at my website, my artist website, because the Facebook URL is really long and weird. Mm. So I have a link to it on my website. My website is jayerker.com, and that's jayerker.com. And the link's on there. You could find it. It's a really simple website.
Great. And tell us about why you chose the first song. I'm intrigued.
Well, if I could do just a little kind of brief overview, I chose a bunch of songs from a specific period in my life, ranging in age from, I think, about 6 years old to 11 years old, maybe like 7 to 11 years old. And it was a really particular part of growing up for me that I remember quite clearly. But in retrospect, everything changes. And who knows what it was like, but I have some interesting experiences at that age. And Sunglasses at Night, it's it's a really funny story. I have a story attached to it. So I was 11 years old, I think, when it came out, and I remember listening to it like when it came out on the radio. So most of the music I heard was via the radio. Everything I heard was the radio. I had an older brother who would play his music, but I don't know. It was a radio time for me.
Did you listen to Casey Kasem's Top 40?
Yes, every weekend.
Yeah,
it was a Sunday, right?
In the morning. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can still see the radio, the little AM/FM player, a Panasonic radio I had in my room. It's crazy. But I just want to tell this story real quick because it's really hilarious. So when I was 11 years old, I used to ride my bike around in my suburban neighborhood in Winter Park, Florida, which is kind of smack dab right in the middle of Florida. And I remember riding my bike at night with my brother's aviators on. They were a little too big for me, and it was the ones that had like the leather. Maybe it was for skiing or something. They were so cool. They were Carreras, yeah. And so I was riding around at night with my sunglasses on, listening to the Walkman, playing Sunglasses at Night, and I thought I was the coolest person in the world. And so I went over the duck pond. The duck pond has this little bridge, just a little cute little bridge over this little pond that's in our neighborhood. And these older kids were hanging out, and they started heckling me and laughing at me for wearing my sunglasses at night. And I felt this, I was so embarrassed because they ruined the mood. Like, I thought I was the coolest thing around. But they put me in my place, my 11-year-old cool place. I just thought, in retrospect, it's hilarious, but I was quite ashamed and embarrassed at the time. That's the story.
Well, I think we all have one of those in our past. For me, probably more than one, several.
At least one.
Yeah, but at least one. Come on. Kids can be quite mean, especially very. About petty, insignificant things, especially.
I probably would have heckled me, too. I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, maybe Corey Hart got heckled as well. You never know. I mean, there's a lot of things happen in our lives.
This is true.
All right, so we're gonna hit the next one, and I don't think it needs much of an introduction. I think most people know this song, so we're gonna turn the mic down and line up.
November and December of 2013. So let's say that the transit is really also with you till the end of 2013, but you'll notice it strongly till February 2013, then it'll ease off a bit till October, November, December 2013.
All right, sorry, folks. We have a little bit of a problem with, the station manager is not around. I think something probably is playing on your computer.
Right.
What is that? Okay, so there's always going to be an issue.
I thought that voice sounded familiar.
Is it something on, is it a podcast? Is it iTunes?
Yeah, no. I think it just kept playing onto the next
okay.
file. And I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, so sorry about that. We got some words happening.
I wonder what that was. Like, I don't remember.
I don't know, but it's something. So we're gonna start with the next. We're gonna make sure that this is all queued up and ready to go. I apologize, our radio listeners, and now we're getting the wheel of death with the Apple. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so it's okay though. We're gonna get a better system in next. Here we go. We'll be right back. All right, Eye of the Tiger. So tell me more about why you picked this song, or tell us.
Okay, that came out in 1982, and it was part of Rocky III. And Rocky was one of my favorite movies at that time. I was in fourth grade, so I was about 9 years old. And I think it really struck a chord with this sense of fight, this idea that people want to bring you down, or the world wants to bring you down, or the world is a really scary place. But you could, you know, overcome it, you know? I mean, maybe you have some failures, maybe things aren't going right, but with a certain attitude, you could overcome those challenges. And I was really, I think that really appealed to me, and especially, well, this is kind of crazy. When I was little, I had terrible anxiety. I was very afraid, almost, afraid to leave the house, phobias, afraid of everything. I was afraid of men, older men, you know, like just looking at me, or just the whole world. It was just this really weird thing. And I think that's why I brought these songs about, because that was the time when I was working through those fears. Mm. And so all of these songs kind of like spoke to me. It was almost as if, like, in retrospect, thinking about it now, I lived my life through the romanticism of these songs. I mean, that's the way I think about it now. And I mean, I became my emotions, like, at those ages, I was ruled by mostly emotions, I think. And those songs held those emotions and kind of taught me these emotions. And so that fight, that fever and that fight, you know, it was, I used to freak out just dancing and just like punching the air, you know, like Rocky, or, you know, I don't know. It was just filled me with a sense of strength.
And how do you feel now when you listen to that song? What kind of memories and feelings does it bring back?
Well, obviously nostalgia. But it's one of those interesting things where, you know, I'm 40 years old now. I was 8 years old or 9 years old then. And those two things, those two time periods, exist simultaneously within you, and you feel them simultaneously. So it's like a dislocation or a disassociation of yourself. But it's super complex, and, you know, you can't untangle it in any fashion. So I feel those same feelings that I imagine I felt and what I remember that I felt back then, but also this sense of, that was funny, or, you know, like kind of a sort of that Proust quote that you did, like those feelings are not destroyed in totality, but they no longer exist within me now. I'm a totally different person. Could you read it again? I thought that was really apt.
Yeah, in me, too, many things have been destroyed that I thought were bound to last forever, and new ones have formed that have given birth to new sorrows and joys, which I could not have foreseen then, just as the old ones have become difficult for me to understand.
Yeah, they're difficult to understand, because it was this prepubescent brain that was working totally on emotion, and was learning about the world, you know, for the first time.
And everything's so new.
Everything is new. Every experience is the first experience. And so now, you know, at the age I am now, those don't exist anymore. So it's...
I mean, as you get older and your prefrontal cortex develops, it's not so overwhelming and emotionally charged from the limbic system. You're actually... You can detach from those emotions, like, oh, I'm having this particular feeling, but
it's
not overturning my entire world. I'm not getting rocked by it.
Exactly. And that's weird too. Like being able to see yourself as you experience something on a physical level. Like that's something I do a lot, based on different practices I do. And that's bizarre. Mm-hmm. I feel like, I don't know. I used to read a bunch of stuff that talks about mindfulness, and I used to think it's like, okay, well, you know, we're humans for a reason. We experience emotion. Okay. I don't know about a reason. We're getting into metaphysical questions, but we're humans, whether we like it or not. It's what we chose to call ourselves as such, and being human entails feeling these crazy emotions, these chemicals, as you mentioned, these physical processes. And that's an aspect of it. So I don't know. In some regard, the mindfulness makes me not feel as crazy. And I kind of like the crazy. I like the chaos and the crazy because I still remember that. And it's still a part of me. And I guess you could still enjoy it, but it doesn't go to the same extreme as it used to when I was younger, which is I'm sad about.
But it's also very human to go in and out of slight regressive states because it's just a normal thing.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And I kind of embrace those when I do that, even though it might, you know, be regretful. It's okay. I like it.
Yeah, but yeah. It's completely par for the course too.
Totally.
Everybody to some degree regresses at some point.
I still feel like a child, but I'm a 40-year-old child. You know, I'm not a virgin though. What is that, the 40-year-old virgin?
Yeah.
I'm not a virgin. Just so you know.
Susan Boyle was for, or maybe still is. She has to not be anymore.
Oh, did she say she was a virgin?
Yeah, that was like one of the things,
I think. Oh my God. That's wonderful.
Everyone has their own path, and Julia Child too. She I think lost her virginity when she was 40.
Wow.
Maybe 30 something, but yeah. It's interesting.
You know, this is so weird, but everything we're talking about now reminds me of these books of short stories I've been reading by Mary Gateskill. You know about him, but I just came across him. I forgot how I came across her. But anywho's, everything we're talking about, she has this short story about this virgin.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then all this other stuff too, but you guys got to read it.
It's good to think about that because it shows there's other ways to live and people have things at different points in their life or don't. And we all belong in some way to the world and I don't know. It's interesting. It's just good to hear experiences different from the quote unquote norm.
Yeah. And I get sick of being myself. I want to be that 40-year-old virgin. I want to know what that's like. You know, I could empathize and sympathize or as much as one can, but I'll never know really what it's like. I'm stuck with all my experiences that I've, had.
But that's what's great about reading stories, is you can kind of feel what it's like through the written word or through the movie or the song.
Exactly.
And speaking of that, let's hit... So the next song is popular if you were conscious and alive in the early 80s.
Not many people were. It was a big cocaine period.
Yes, it was a big cocaine period, but I love this song as well. So let's hit it. All right. And we're back. But I have yet to remember to turn off the actual
line down. Oh, I did something else.
Sorry, guys. still learning. So the greatest American hero, the TV show.
Yeah.
There was a bike.
There's lots of things in that show.
Yeah.
I think it's the underdog in the desert or near the desert. I don't remember much about it, but definitely an underdog. This is a theme here. I don't know. I think with this was more of like all the while, like the things I explained about being afraid and of the world and stuff and the things I did to try to overcome it. I mean, I think all the while, I used to be a voracious reader. When I was little, I would read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. And this show, you know, was just another one of those places where I could just, you know, kind of escape into this possibility, this realm of possibility that the real world that I was experiencing didn't provide. And I loved The Greatest American Hero because, you know, this guy was a goofball, someone you could relate to, right? He had lots of faults. He wasn't the cool guy. I mean, he was a good-looking guy. But he wasn't cool in any fashion, you know, and he became the superhero. He wasn't perfect, you know, but he did his best. And I thought that was beautiful and so sweet.
Well, it's really inspiring, too, because you don't have to be this exceptionally talented person to lead an extraordinary life, per se.
No, true. And it was really funny. And I really related to that, too. Because I'm a bit of a goofball, or, you know, kind of stupid, goofy, but in the best way, I think, you know. So I really related to his sense of humor, you know, mm-hmm. It was kind of slapstick a bit, and I love slapstick. So I don't know. That one's a classic for me. That one really, really strikes a chord of this kind of innocence that I remember, or this desire and longing for something more that I was experiencing as a child. And I love that kind of placing, you know, the everyday next to these like crazy possibility, fantastical kind of things that could possibly happen, you know, in the world.
Look, it provides a lot of hope and something to aspire to.
Definitely. I mean, in the feeling itself that it engendered was, you know, just joy. It was just joy, just pure joy. I just remember feeling that. And that's inspiring, the fact that you could feel that in your life. Just, it doesn't matter what's causing it or what you're thinking about, or it doesn't matter what it is. The fact that you can experience that is quite phenomenal. You know, I don't know. And that show is really about joy for me, I think, just fun and joy.
Yeah, I have read an article today about how you can empathize. Like, there's an actual, I can't remember the psychological term, but where you emotionally connect with a character as if you know that person. So in a way. And it's a real psychological phenomenon that happens for people watching TV shows, which is really interesting. And in a way, when it's a show like that, it really can sort of inspire you to do more in your life and provide that joy and connect with that character who's the underdog that ends up becoming something someone quite great.
Yeah, that's I wanted to say, are you speaking in regards to the mirror neurons that they found?
It was a super brief article.
Yeah, it's the mirror neurons that allow us to empathize with other people. Like, they did a bunch of tests. It's quite interesting. But I like what you're talking about in terms of, like, the shows and how we can empathize with these characters. And it's funny, too, because the last two songs had movies or shows attached to them. You know, so it's not only music, which is really good at emotion, and words too, which sort of, you know, trigger emotions. But they're also accompanied with a visual. And during that time when I was that age, I think MTV started. You know, so that's, you know.
Which was huge.
Yeah, and Corey Haim's video was playing all the time.
Corey Haim?
I'm sorry, Corey Hart.
Corey Haim.
Sorry. Similar time period.
Yeah.
So that wasn't too far off. But yeah, Corey Hart's video, you know, I remember. I don't remember in detail, but I remember, I think it was black and white. But I don't think it was a very good video.
It probably wasn't.
I don't think so. A lot of sunglasses and at night. Yeah. I think, yeah.
And Martha Quinn.
Right. Love her.
Yeah. She was the best.
I like the real stoic guy. I can't remember his name. Real stoic. Well, he was like the real news guy. He was
Kurt
awesome.
Loder?
Yes. Yes. I love his voice.
Yeah. That was when MTV was really like unimaginable. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Music videos.
Yeah.
And pairing that together and that coming on the television.
Yeah.
It was a special time.
It really was. And we didn't have cable, and so we would only watch it when we were in hotels. And so me and my brother and my sister would just sit there and just watch cable all the time. It was really weird. But we'd watch MTV. And so, I don't know. It's interesting how these memories, you know, are coupled with this specific kind of imagery, you know, and how all of these things kind of play a role in our lives, you know.
The first music video I ever saw was Material Girl by Madonna.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that. I remember that video very well.
Yeah, it's a great video.
Great video. The pink dress, right, with the diamonds?
Yeah, yep. Marilyn Monroe.
Yep, and the guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was the best.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. All these memories are coming back.
And speaking of Madonna, the next artist we have actually did cover Madonna, as well as Michael Jackson and so many other famous songs.
He just did a new one.
He did just do a new one, and he recorded in my friend's studio in LA, which is amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
That's great.
That was great. And I did see him in the spring walking out of Sage Organic Bistro, and I was super excited.
Oh my gosh, that must have been so amazing.
It was amazing. So now you're all probably at the, you know, edge of your seats wondering who this is. So we're going to play it for you, and you're hopefully going to enjoy it. So here we go.
You're so fine, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Lucy! Hey, Lucy!
Oh, Ricky, you're so fine, you play your bongos all the time. Hey, Ricky! Hey, Ricky!
Oh, Lucy, you're so fine, how I love to hear you whine. Hey, Lucy!
Hey, Ricky! You always play your conga drums. You think you got the right. You wake up little Ricky in the middle of the night. Stop shaking your maracas now and just turn out the light, Ricky!
I'm sick of Fred and Ethel always coming over here. Cause Fred eats all our pretzel sticks and then it spills his beer. Why don't you serve your casserole and make them disappear, Lucy? You iron my new shirt and you burn it whole right through. You're such a crazy redhead, I just
Oh, Ricky, what a pity, don't you understand? That every day's a rerun and the laughter's always canned.
Oh, Lucy, I'm the laughing leader of the band. So here's to you, Lucy. Let's pop a loo, Lucy, do, Lucy. Everybody rumba!
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Weird Al Yankovic.
And that was from 1983. And where were you in 1983? Were you yet born?
I was born.
You were born.
I was born. I was six.
You were 6 years old.
Yeah.
Oh.
Five or six.
Oh, I'm not that much older than you.
No.
I was 10 years old. I was in the fifth grade. And Weird. Every time we keep talking, like, stuff mm-hmm. keeps coming back. And I remember, oh gosh, am I going to remember her name? Anyway, I went to school with this girl. She was in a grade below me, fourth grade. And Weird Al Yankovic was her uncle.
Really?
That's what she told us. I haven't been able to prove it, nor have I looked into it. But yeah, apparently he's her uncle. And I guess when
amazing.
I know. She was pretty cool, I have to say. I don't imagine her making that up. It wasn't part of her thing. But I think when Beat It came out, that was a huge part of
Eat It or Beat It.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Eat It. Beat It. Eat It. Yes.
And he wore that suit that blew up like a balloon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. He was really big at that time.
He was huge.
And he really colored, you know, the cultural makeup for me at that age. And what it was, what it represented to me was just this, again, kind of similar to the Greatest American Hero, this, like, just goofy weirdness, this oddball kind of thing mm-hmm. that I never really experienced before, except, you know, goofing around ourselves or... not in that way. So I think I was really inspired by him. And, you know, again, it's like these experiences that you have, these first times. I think Weird Al Yankovic's expression of his creativity is quite particular.
And yes. I don't think there's anyone like him.
No.
No.
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure some of my older friends who have better memories might be able to come up with somebody.
Or somebody that's tried to be like that, but
yeah.
No one that does it quite
right
like him.
No, and it's a specific time period. We're mm-hmm. dealing with, you know, popular culture. Not that popular culture never existed before, but it's a specific kind, you know, with a specific interest and time period. You know, every time period's different, so... you're right, it's very specific. So that gave me specific feelings. Specific feelings.
And we are gonna move along to the next song. And it is, I'm gonna just introduce it. It's Renegade by Styx.
Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law. Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home. Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying, you're so scared and all alone. Hangman is coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Yeah. provided any explanation. This morning's unprecedented solar eclipse is no cause for alarm.
And that was Queen, which I did not know before you shared the playlist with me prior to the show.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of Queen in 1980 when it came out either. I was 7 years old and really, associated with a visual accompaniment, a movie, Flash, of the same name.
Flash Gordon.
That's right, Flash Gordon. I saw it in a drive-in movie theater. Rocked my world.
You're so lucky.
I know. It was. It might have been like a double feature with Disney's, The Black Hole?
Florida?
Yes. Yes. I don't remember the theater, the drive-in. No, it's not coming to me. But I have a vision of the lawn chairs that we'd use and sit out in front. Oh my God, how beautiful that was. And the evening. Oh, sorry, going back. Flash, another superhero. This one was highly fantastical as opposed to Greatest American Hero. And it was just bold, wacky, flamboyant movie. I think it totally bombed in the theaters at the time.
It's so famous though. Everybody knows it. From that time period.
It's true. It's true. I think it really appealed to a certain personality, perhaps. Flash Gordon was a comic book originally. And, you know, it just kind of played on the character, the movie itself.
Right.
And then the actors were so... What was that? That was 1980. I mean, I remember the guy. I mean, that blonde hair with the wave.
Right.
You know, the shoulder-length blonde hair. I mean, it was over the top. And the color in the film was fantastic, you know. And it had that sort of self-conscious special effect thing that we enjoy that is nostalgic, too, like the old Star Wars, you know. It's like you could see beyond it. We know it's a kind of a fake or... But that really wasn't what Flash Gordon, for me, was about. It was just more about the flamboyant... Mm-hmm. Crazy fantasy.
And just to throw in a childhood note from that, I just remembered one of my childhood friends had a dog named Flash.
Nice.
And when the dog ran by, we used to go, Flash!
Beautiful memory.
Yeah, so that's it. And I don't even think we were conscious of the movie. We would just do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Became part of the...
It just became part of the childhood vernacular.
Vernacular, yeah.
Yeah.
So cool.
So this next... We're going to get a little bit more rockin', ladies and gentlemen, with this next tune. So let's just have you listen to it and figure it out. All right, Jay, tell us about that tune.
Sexual. It's awesome.
How old were you when it came out?
Let's see, I was 11. And that just turned me on. I don't know. It's pure sexuality for me at that age. That kind of music, like, you know, I mean, I could have picked like 20 other songs as well, in addition to these that, you know, had similar effects on me. So I felt like this one best represented those as a group, these sort of sexualized masculinity and what that meant, the mystery of that to me at that age.
In pre-adolescence.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have to say, compared to a lot of other people I've spoken with, I was pretty early sexualized. And I think it was partially because it was these songs that I listened to kind of waked me up to, you know, they created these emotions, these feelings that I didn't know what they were, but there I was experiencing them. And I don't know, it was pretty great. And I really enjoyed that. Again, it was like experiencing these things that I've never experienced before, and I won't ever
new.
Again. Yeah.
It's just when everything is new.
Yeah. And it was really great. That
and innocence. Everything is so impressionable.
Yeah. And it was dirty, though, too. I want to mention that, you know, there was darkness there. It wasn't just, you know, this innocent sexuality, you know, but it was a little dirty. And I liked that. I liked that a lot.
So we are almost at the end of our show. What do you want to say to talk about all these songs together and introduce the next song?
Oh, boy. I don't know. They're just a really great reflection of what I was experiencing at the time. And this one, the one coming up next, was sort of a, I don't know. Again, there's like a bit of a romanticism surrounding all of these songs. And this one is sort of a very romantic song for me.
Like the charming mistakes of our youth.
Yeah, yeah, this idea of love conquers all. I really, truly believed it at that age, and I continued to for a while after that. I don't know. This is the knight in shining armor. Can he come and save me? I'm going to wait. I'm going to hold out.
Are we going to hold out?
Yes. What are you going to hold out for?
A hero.
Yes.
We'll be right back.